Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. I'm your host, Holly, and I just want to say happy Monday. I hope that wherever you are in the world, today is an amazing day and that this entire week is a good one for you guys. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. On Mondays, I like to try and feature a new Missing Monday case. Missing Mondays is a segment that was created to help keep missing persons' name and information in the media the best that I can to hopefully help aid in their return home. Oftentimes, when the hype of a missing persons case dies down and everyone goes back to their regular lives, the families are left feeling forgotten. It is my mission to use my platform to continue sharing these stories. And not only that, but to let the families know that their loved one matters. They matter to me and they matter to all of my listeners. All it takes is one person coming forward with information to help solve these cases. And so I will continue sharing their names and their stories until they are brought home. I don't have any kind of case updates to give. If you do follow me on Facebook, you may have seen that I have been following the Lindsay Clancy case that is currently about to begin. This past week, they did jury selection, and so opening statements are going to be starting on Monday. If you find me on social media, you can find my group, which then you can follow me. And I am giving those trial updates like I did for the Eric Richens case. The Lindsay Clancy case, I have not covered it on the podcast. However, it is one that a lot of people are interested in. And I want to follow that one closely because I feel like a lot of people have mixed emotions about what had happened. And just to give you like a really quick brief rundown, Lindsay has pled not guilty to the murder of her three children. However, the defense is acknowledging that she did in fact take the lives of her children. They believe that she should not be held responsible due to the fact that she was struggling with her mental health. She was in the process of, you know, being treated by a doctor, doing all the things because she was struggling with postpartum psychosis. So it's an interesting case to follow, and the discussion that people are having is pretty intriguing. And so that is why I am following that one so closely. Before we dive into the details, though, of today's case, I do have some Patreon shout outs to give. A big Crime with Holly welcome to Amy and Kenneth. These two just secured their spots behind the Patreon crime scene tape, and I couldn't be more grateful. Thank you guys for believing in me and my mission with my podcast. I appreciate you both more than words can express. If you guys want to be like Amy and Kenneth and join the family, you can do so by visiting www.patreon.com/crimewithholly. And for just $2 a month, you can join the fam as well. Thanks again to Amy and Kenneth. You both rock. I love you guys and I appreciate you. All right, so let's go ahead and get down to today's episode. Today's Missing Monday is on the disappearance of Tabitha Tudors. On the morning of April 19th, 2003, 13-year-old Tabitha Tudors left her home located on the 1300 block of Lillian Street in East Nashville, Tennessee, and she left to catch the bus to school like she did every day. Tabitha was a seventh grader at Bailey Middle School, where she was described to be an incredible student who did well in all of her classes. Tabitha was well-liked by all of her peers, and she was just overall an extremely friendly little girl. In the months before her disappearance, she began attending church with one of her friends and did all that she could to be involved with what was going on within the community. Most of the time, though, Tabitha stayed close to her family. Of course, she loved hanging out and playing with her friends, but when her family was not at work and at home, that's where she preferred to be. And if she wasn't with her friends or family, she could be found hanging out with some of her elderly neighbors, which she grew very close to these neighbors and referred to some of them as her grandmother. And I just think that is so cute. And I remember myself getting close with some of my elderly neighbors and feeling good about spending time with them and helping them with various tasks around the home. Tabitha became so close with one of her grandmas that on occasion, when her family would cook something that she really wasn't wanting for dinner, she would go off to her grandma neighbor because she knew that she would cook her some chicken nuggets or something else that she enjoyed. Overall, I think from what I have learned about Tabitha was that she was just wise beyond her years. She enjoyed those slower paced, relaxed, finer things in life, which is somewhat unusual for a 13-year-old girl. But that was just Tabitha and who she was at her core. That morning on April 29th, 2003, it started off as any other day for Tabitha and her family. Her mother, Deborah, woke up around 6 a.m. to begin her morning routine to get ready for work. When she woke up, she found that Tabitha was sleeping at the foot of her bed, which this wasn't unusual for Tabitha. Often in the night, Tabitha would wake up and come into her parents' room, and she would make a pallet on the floor at the end of their bed, and that's where she would sleep the remainder of the night. Deborah wasn't sure exactly why Tabitha did this, but she assumed it was because Tabitha just wanted to feel close to her parents. Maybe she had a nightmare and wanted to be closer. So when her mom spotted her on the floor, she just stepped over her like she had done a million times before and went about her regular morning routine before leaving for work. Not long later, Tabitha's father, Beau, woke up to begin getting ready for his day of work as a truck driver. At 7 a.m., Beau woke up Tabitha and told her it was time to get ready for school before he left for work. Though both of her parents left for work, Tabitha wasn't alone in the home. Tabitha's older sister and her children also lived at the home, but while Tabitha was going about her morning schedule, her sister and the children were still asleep, so they didn't see her on that morning. Every morning around 7:50, Tabitha would leave her home and walk just a few blocks up the road to the bus stop located on 14th and Boscobel Street. This was typically a quick little walk, and the bus arrived to pick the children up at 8 a.m. to take them to school. But somehow something happened between Tabitha's quick walk to the bus stop, and on that day, she never made it there. Now, what is extremely unfortunate about this entire story is that the full school day had passed before anyone was even aware that Tabitha was missing. Her mother worked at a different school and would come home and wait for Tabitha to get home from school. Tabitha's schedule was literally like clockwork every single day. So Deborah became concerned as 4 p.m. came and went and Tabitha hadn't walked through the front door. She started to wonder if maybe Tabitha's bus had somehow gotten delayed on its route, or perhaps Tabitha missed the bus altogether. While Deborah was a little bit concerned that Tabitha hadn't, you know, called her to tell her that she missed the bus, which that's typically what she would do, she was still hopeful that the bus was just running late. After some time, though, Deborah decided that she would walk down to the bus stop and see if maybe the school bus would randomly show up or she would find her daughter delayed because she was talking with friends. But when she got down there, there was no sign of the bus, Tabitha, or any other kids. At this point for Deborah, she assumed that the most logical explanation as to why her daughter wasn't home was because she missed the bus. So she loaded up in the car and drove the few miles to the school. But still in the back of her mind, this idea that Tabitha had missed the bus and nobody from the school had called to notify her, that really made her uneasy, but she was still clinging to that little piece of hope. When she arrived at the school, she found that the building was completely locked. There was no children, no adults, and no Tabitha waiting for a ride. Panicked, Deborah rushed back home, and by 5 p.m., Beau was arriving home as well from work, and that is when he learned the news about his daughter. He and his wife headed back to the school and began pounding on the doors in hopes that someone was inside. And to their surprise, a janitor was inside cleaning and he let them in. They searched up and down the halls thinking that maybe Tabitha was inside somewhere, or maybe somehow she had got locked into a room. During their search, they ran into a teacher that had stayed behind to finish up some classwork, and they asked about their daughter, and that's when they got the shocking news that Tabitha wasn't at school that day. She had been absent all day long. They immediately called 911, and by 6 p.m., Tabitha was listed as missing. Now, one thing that a lot of people really get upset about with this case is the fact that no Amber Alert was issued. I think for most of us, we are aware of what an Amber Alert is, but if you're not, the Amber Alert is an emergency response system that sends out information on missing children. This is done through media broadcasting, text messages, and is put on electronic roadway signs. The Amber Alert is an incredible system and has helped find many, many children. But one thing about the system is that certain criteria has to be met in order to issue the alert. For example, alerts are issued for known abductions. Typically, they require enough of a description of the child, such as what they're wearing, as well as a description of the car or person that they could potentially be with. Unfortunately, for this case, no one knew enough information to release an Amber Alert. When her parents left that morning, Tabitha wasn't dressed for the day, so they didn't even know what she had been wearing. And even though her sister and her children were home, they all had been asleep when Tabitha left. And at the same time, authorities weren't even sure if Tabitha was abducted at all, and perhaps she was just a runaway. But Deborah and Beau knew their daughter. But not only that, all of her closest family, friends, and even neighbors who she hung around knew she wasn't the type of girl to run off. Tabitha was extremely responsible. She absolutely loved being near her family, and this was completely out of character. Of course, authorities, mentioned the fact that Tabitha was a teen girl. Maybe she ditched out on school with some friends, like a lot of, I think all of us can relate to. We've all done it at some point or another. But again, Tabitha never would have done that. She was extremely proud of her attendance record and good grades, that she wouldn't have wanted to ruin that just to ditch school to hang out with friends. The school never called to notify anyone that Tabitha was absent. And I'm not sure how it is for other parents across the country or even across the world, but I know that here in Nevada where I live, when my children are marked absent from school, I receive a phone call from the school, and that usually happens between 10 and 11 a.m. Granted, I do feel like 10 or 11 is somewhat late for a notification, because if something had happened on their way to school, that would have been several hours that had passed before I was even notified. But of course, the schools do have a lot of children, but everything now is pretty digital, so I feel like those notifications could potentially go out a little bit earlier. But for Tabitha's case, nobody called her parents at any point in the day. Not even by 5 p.m. when her mother was frantically running up and down the halls of the school had she received a phone call. So this left a huge window of time where Tabitha could have been searched for. Something happened between 7:50 a.m. and 8 a.m., meaning 10 hours had passed before Tabitha was even listed as a missing person. The response team of officers began by canvassing the neighborhood Tabitha lived in and expanded about 2 miles out from her home. All around Tabitha's home was a huge neighborhood, and within this neighborhood is just a ton of houses, as well as 2 schools. Given the time of the morning that Tabitha went missing, there's typically a lot of people milling about. Whether they're collecting their paper from their porch or drinking their morning coffee or getting ready and leaving for work. There's a lot of activity happening within this large neighborhood. So this gave a significant amount of hope that someone had seen Tabitha that morning and saw what had happened. Tabitha's parents and a team of 15 police officers searched for hours for any sign of Tabitha, and they found nothing. Come 10 p.m. that night, the first news coverage of Tabitha's disappearance was pumped out into the media, and again her family was hopeful that someone would see it and have information. The police worked for 3 days searching for Tabitha and doing various news interviews, but it was very apparent in all of the news clips that they felt that Tabitha was just a runaway. It was extremely frustrating to her family because they felt with these interviews, it was creating a lack of urgency to search for Tabitha. And I know that with missing children and missing teens, the parents often say that it's not like their child to run away and then come to find out they truly did. But for Tabitha, this was unimaginable. She had just received her report card the day before and was excited that she had all A's. She had an incredible life being the youngest child, and according to her parents, she was quite spoiled. And not only that, but her family had a vacation planned for Six Flags just 2 weeks later that Tabitha was extremely excited about. When people hear that a child is potentially a runaway, unfortunately, they lose interest, and I hate that for Tabitha's family or any family that has to go through this. The neighbors that lived near Tabitha even vouched to investigators that Tabitha was like clockwork with her routine and was such a good child that she would never do something like this. Also, on top of the family and neighbors saying that Tabitha would never run away, they found that the core items that someone would take if they wanted to run away were all left behind. There was nothing missing from her room, no extra clothing gone, and she even had cash left behind in her room, which to me indicates that she didn't plan on going anywhere. A kid with no way of making money for themselves if they ran away, they wouldn't leave behind any funds that they had if they planned to run off and just go start a new life or something. That's just not happening. While searching her room, police did find a piece of paper that left everyone with a lot of questions. Written on the paper was her initials, and then below that, she put the letter N. You know how people, like, instead of writing and, they'll put the N? So that's what it was. It was her initials and then an N. And then below the N was another person's initials of MTL. This was written in Tabitha's handwriting, and it was one of those kind of things that we've all done when we had a crush on someone. You know, we would write our little initials together. But what was puzzling for her family was they had no idea who this MTL person could have been. And from my understanding, they were never able to positively identify who this person could have been. Now, I'm assuming that the police went to the school during their investigation to see if they could narrow down who this MTL person was so that they could question them, or to even find out if this person was a student at the school. But again, they weren't able to identify who this person was, so I'm assuming that maybe this was someone who didn't even go to her school. Investigators also went down to the library that Tabitha would go to use the computers to talk in different online chat rooms. They checked the computer logs, and that led them nowhere as well. As the days went on and no Tabitha, the community that they lived in really rallied behind the tutors and came to support this family in a way that I haven't quite seen before. Friends, family, neighbors, and even random strangers all band together to create a meal train for the tutors to make sure that they always had a warm meal. And so they didn't have to worry or think about trying to plan trips to the store or to cook. They put together a full year's worth of a schedule of meals for them, having all of the people taking turns bringing things over to feed them. I cannot imagine how nice this was for the family. With the stress of a missing child and that worry of what happened to her, having one less stressor on their plate, such as figuring out what to eat, probably was an incredible help. I applaud those who stepped up to the plate for this family, and all of us should try and take note here for how we can react as a community if this were to ever happen near us. Within the first week of Tabitha having gone missing, authorities brought in several dogs to attempt to track her scent. The dogs were individually taken out to try and track her scent, and they all did something very interesting. All of the dogs went from Tabitha's home on Lillian Street and followed it down to 14th Street, which this was her normal route that she would have taken. From 14th Street, the dogs turned and walked up Boscobel Street, which again was the route that she would have taken because her bus was located on Boscobel. But halfway up the hill of that street, the dogs would stop and turn back around and head back down the hill, indicating to everyone that Tabitha never made it all the way up to her bus stop and for some reason traveled back down. Everyone in Tabitha's family was questioned and given polygraph tests to rule them out. Some people felt uneasy about the fact that Tabitha's older sister Jamie was the last person in the house with Tabitha, even though she claimed that she never saw her because she was sleeping. But the rumor mill began circulating, and people got nasty with spreading stories. Police also announced that there was some issues with Jamie's story, which she later came out and detailed how bullied, pressured, and intimidated she had been by the police questioning her. She was threatened by the investigating officers who had questioned her. They told her that if she failed her polygraph test, that they would have her kids taken from her. They told her that the whole world, including her family, would see her face all over the news. And all of this led to Jamie being extremely anxious, which I can relate. I would imagine hearing that you could possibly lose your kids would set anyone on edge. She was so anxious to the point that she couldn't even answer any of the polygraph questions without being absolutely terrified. And of course, this could skew the results of a polygraph, having this much stress and anxiety, even if it doesn't directly relate to the questions they're asking. And that is exactly what happened to Jamie. Investigators also looked into the sex offender and ex-cons that lived within Tabitha's neighborhood, and to their surprise, there was a significant amount of them. This obviously created a lot of worry for not only Tabitha's parents, but for investigators as well. So they went through the list of them and questioned every single one of them to rule them out. This brought out a lot of potential persons of interest. They learned that a couple who lived a few houses down from Tabitha's on Lillian Street had been accused of sexually assaulting a minor just 2 weeks after Tabitha went missing. According to the Charlie Project, there had also been a man who was arrested just months after Tabitha vanished after he tried to lure an 11-year-old girl into his car. This man became someone that they looked into very heavily because of the nature of his crime and because of the fact that this took place just a few blocks from Tabitha's home. This is extremely suspicious and very concerning, but they were never able to connect this man to Tabitha's case, and eventually he was removed from the suspect list. Years later, someone came forward also from the neighborhood to warn Tabitha's parents of one of their family members being potentially involved. Apparently, this person came forward to say that one of their family members had sexually assaulted his own daughter and was sent to prison for 10 years. And they told authorities and the tutors that he might be someone they should look into because he was a known offender. This was also looked into, but much like the other people who came up during this investigation of offenders in the area, he was ruled out. Through their initial search, they also were able to find people who had said they had seen Tabitha walking that morning. One man said he saw Tabitha that morning going from Lillian Street and onto 14th Street. So they for sure had that eyewitness placing her on 14th. A couple more witnesses said they saw her walking along 14th Street, headed in the direction of Boscobel and her bus stop. A man living on Boscobel also claimed that he had just opened his door that morning when he saw Tabitha walking by, and when she walked by him, she was looking down at a piece of paper. She appeared normal, didn't seem upset or nervous, and was simply just walking along the road. And lastly, the last person to have possibly seen Tabitha was a young boy. What I could find about this potential sighting to me seems fairly credible, but police have not confirmed his story, and some investigators question the credibility of the story he told. The boy said that he had seen Tabitha walking up the hill on Boscobel towards the bus stop. He said he saw a red car pull up beside Tabitha. She and the driver exchanged a quick conversation before she got into the car, and he did a quick U-turn and drove off. The boy described the driver of the red car as a 30 to 40-year-old African-American man, and he was wearing some sort of baseball cap. Now, what I find interesting about this story is the fact that we know those dogs traced Tabitha's scent up Boscobel, and then they abruptly stopped and went back down the hill. This would match up with what the boy had said he witnessed, and again, I'm not sure why exactly authorities questioned his credibility and the circumstances surrounding that. But I do find it interesting because of all the theories, this one seems almost the most plausible. After months of searching and following leads, they were at a standstill. And at this point, authorities still kind of had it in their minds that Tabitha was a potential runaway. That is until the summer of 2003 when they began working on another possible lead. A man claimed to have seen Tabitha while driving another young man to a nearby high school. His story was off from the get-go, and it wasn't really adding up, so investigators really had a ton of questions about his story. But then he began talking to reporters and news outlets who were covering her story, and he made some very questionable comments. He would detail in these interviews how he had witnessed Tabitha, but he would then make inappropriate comments to describe her. He made a comment which absolutely set me on edge. His comment was about how Tabitha was developing physically. When he would describe her, he would talk with his hands and would kind of make motions of how her body was shaped, if that makes sense. Like he was kind of like moving his hands about where like her curves would be. And on top of his story, weird comments about Tabitha's appearance, he also couldn't give the police any kind of true reason why he was even in Tabitha's neighborhood to begin with. So they started wondering if he was a predator who was on the prowl for easy targets. He became one of the top suspects, and police obtained a search warrant for his home in Shelby Park, just 2 miles from Tabitha's home. They searched his home from top to bottom and even used luminol to search for any traces of blood. Unfortunately, not a single shred of evidence or any kind of blood was found within his home. And though he wasn't officially ruled out as a suspect, they did begin trying to look elsewhere for answers once more. The more time that passed, the more authorities were finally moving past that thought that maybe Tabitha was just a teenage girl who ran away from home. And they began really thinking about the possibility that something far more sinister could have happened to her. On October 30th, 6 months after Tabitha had gone missing, a truck driver who was in Linton, Indiana, reported that he believed he saw Tabitha Tudors. Now, Linton is about a 3-hour and 40-minute drive from East Nashville, and this truck driver claimed that he saw two young girls with an older man, and the one who looked eerily similar to Tabitha appeared to be very uncomfortable. There was also a hotel desk clerk around the same time who had reported seeing two young girls, one of which, who they also believed was Tabitha, with an older man at the hotel. Both of these sightings were never confirmed. Tabitha's family were extremely frustrated that it had taken so long for the police to really let go of that idea that she had ran away. They felt that there was a lot of things that weren't done initially that should have been done because of the fact that they labeled her as a runaway, despite everything going against that theory. Tabitha's sister even told the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that Tabitha had nothing to run away from. She was extremely happy and had everything in life. The police chief at the time of Tabitha's disappearance was a woman named Deborah Faulkner, and she has been under a lot of scrutiny for the way in which she handled Tabitha's case. And according to an article published by the Nashville Scene, she never came out and publicly apologized or took any kind of responsibility for how it was handled. This really frustrated Tabitha's family, and Deborah Faulkner even tried to place some blame on the Tudors, stating that it took them over 3 days to identify what it was that Tabitha was wearing that day. And she also complained that she was given an outdated photo of Tabitha. The fact that this woman felt okay about throwing shade at this family just boggles my mind. These parents went through the worst thing any parent could ever go through. And to place any kind of blame on them for taking a while to pinpoint what their child was wearing is completely unacceptable. I have to say, if I didn't see my kid leave for school, I probably would have a hard time knowing what he would have worn. Thankfully, now we have, you know, Ring cameras and stuff like that that we can look back on, but then that wasn't as common. This is something that I have thought about myself as a parent. Would I be able to identify what my child was wearing? And to do so under such stress and anxiety, I could not imagine that level of pressure. This family was doing the best that they could, and everybody in the community were completely outraged by Faulkner's behavior. Thankfully, in January of 2004, she was replaced by a new chief named Ronald Surpass. And within days of him taking over, he announced his belief that Tabitha Tudors was abducted. He also declared that her case was now a top priority for him and the whole department. Many different detectives worked tirelessly to comb through all of the information once more and see if anything was missed. Not only that, but the FBI was looking into the case as well, and even family friends of the Tudors tried to solve the case on their own. Johnny White was a longtime friend of the Tudors, and he has spent many, many hours searching alongside her family. Many times he has walked the steps that Tabitha was last known to have walked, hoping to find any kind of answers. But one thing he can't get past is his theory that a former boyfriend of Tabitha's older sister, Jamie, might be involved. Jamie does not believe that this now ex-boyfriend could be involved. Johnny White says otherwise, and I can see why his theory aligns with the possibility of this man's involvement. On the morning that Tabitha disappeared, Jamie's boyfriend had gotten off work around 7 a.m. from a nearby retail store where he was working, stocking the shelves. This boyfriend had previously lived with the Tudors for several months, so he was very familiar with Tabitha and her schedule and routine. This boyfriend also happens to be driving a red car on the day of her disappearance, as well as fitting the description of the driver the young boy claimed he saw Tabitha get into the car with. It is also reported that during the search, when the whole family was searching, he refused to help. Now, a ton of people online believe that this guy is responsible, given the fact that Tabitha knew him personally. And Tabitha knew not to speak or get in the car with strangers. But this guy wasn't a stranger to her, and he was someone she knew very well. He had been around plenty and even lived with her. Maybe she got into the car with him. In August of 2003, an 11-year-old girl went missing from Northport, Alabama. She had a lot of the same physical appearances as Tabitha and went missing under strikingly similar circumstances. However, this girl's body was found sometime later, and though no physical evidence can link the two cases, investigators do not want to rule out the possibility that they are connected. Beau and Deborah have done anything and everything that they could do to spread awareness on their daughter's case, including going on a few talk shows in hopes that someone somewhere will see the story and recognize Tabitha. With the media and nationwide exposure also comes with a lot of people who try to take advantage of their tragedy. And sadly, this is something that many people with a missing loved one have to deal with. One thing I try to keep an open mind about is psychics. And I know for many, this is an extremely touchy subject. Some people feel very passionate about psychics and their abilities to see things, while others want to completely ban them. The Tudors went on to the Montel Williams show, where they met a psychic who told them that their daughter was no longer alive and that her remains were in a field. But when asked where, she was unable to tell them the location. This very same psychic went on to tell the family of another missing child, a boy by the name of Sean Hornbeck, exactly the same information. She claimed that Sean was dead, his remains were in a field, but Sean was actually found alive more than 4 years after his disappearance. And he had been held captive by a man just outside of St. Louis. The fact that this psychic got the information wrong about Sean's case provided a sliver of hope for Tabitha's family that maybe, just maybe, she was out there somewhere. The family also had to get rid of their house phone because they were constantly getting phone calls from people pretending to be Tabitha, saying things like, "Come save me." Once more, I cannot imagine the agony this caused her family. And it's absolutely heart-wrenching and disgusting to know that such evil people are out there making jokes and making light of something so terrible. It's disgusting to think that people want to play such a cruel trick on a family who has lost so much already. Since she has gone missing, a memorial has been created for Tabitha outside of one of the local middle schools, where a tree has been planted and a bench is placed in her honor with a plaque. Deborah and Beau also attended what would have been Tabitha's high school graduation, where they dedicated a moment of silence to her. Every year on April 29th, her family holds a vigil to remember her and to keep her story alive. As the years have gone by, so much in our world has changed. Social media has exploded, and we are finding new ways all the time to share these stories, from podcasts to YouTube to Facebook groups and now TikTok. Her family is hopeful that with the incredible power of social media, they will someday get the answers that they so desperately desire. And if you follow me on TikTok or have listened to my podcast for a while, you know that I preach that there is so much power in social media. I think there is a lot of good that can come from sharing these stories, not only to show support to the families who have lost someone, but to also help solve these cases. It takes one person to blow a case wide open, one person to come forward with even the smallest, tiny piece of information to finally give these families closure and answers. The answers are out there. It's just a matter of reaching the right person and unlocking that final piece that is missing from the puzzle. In 2005, the FBI offered a $25,000 reward for anyone who has information on the disappearance of Tabitha Tudors. On the 13th anniversary of her disappearance, that reward was doubled to $50,000 for information, and that is what the reward is currently set at. Investigators are still working on her case and have had many sets of eyes combing over the information, searching for anything that they may have missed. And through all the years, tips have continued to come in about the case. In 2016, one of the detectives working the case by the name of Stephen Jolly had learned about a rumor that had been circulating about another young boy witnessing Tabitha getting into a car. This boy claimed that Tabitha had gotten into a green car and that this car had a scorpion decal on it. Police were never able to pinpoint who the child was that had claimed he had seen Tabitha getting into this green car, so this was just chalked up as a rumor. But in 2016, Stephen Jolly was able to finally track down the witness, who was now a grown man. He did confirm that he saw Tabitha getting into a green car on that morning, and though his description of the car was different from the other child's, it still fits the theory that she got into the car with someone. Detective Stephen Jolly followed this lead to the best of his ability, and it led him to a man named Juan. Now, what is interesting about Juan is he did in fact own this green car. But at the time of Tabitha's disappearance, he had also owned a red car, too. But according to News Channel 5, even though Juan was named a person of interest, once police were able to track him down, he was quickly ruled out as being involved in the case. Also in 2016, two federal subpoenas were ordered for a man and a woman. Apparently, the man who this subpoena was for had been arrested somewhere out of state, and while being arrested, he claimed that he had information on Tabitha Tudors. When he was questioned further about it, he completely took back everything he had said. But what he had said was interesting enough to authorities that they turned the information over to the FBI, and it was the FBI that issued the subpoenas. These two individuals had to answer questions in court, and sadly, this didn't lead to any new information or answers on what had happened to Tabitha. In February 2020, Detective Stephen Jolly met for a one-on-one interview with News 2, where he stated that many tips had come in throughout the years suggesting that Tabitha was abducted, drugged, and forced into sex work in the Dickerson Road and Trinity Lane area. And he added that many of these tips included the name of the same man who happened to be in federal prison for being involved in prostitution in the East Nashville area. In August of 2020, a search was conducted in a rural part of Hickman County. The area that they searched was described by police to News Channel 5 as a 6-acre rugged plot of land with a small dilapidated house on it. It was also described as mostly wooded. Investigators claimed that old and new information is what led them to the area, and that they were searching for any kind of evidence to support the theory that she had been in that area. After 2 days of searching, they ended their search and stated that they were unable to confirm if Tabitha was ever on that property. However, they were not completely ruling it out as of yet. Since then, a New Age Progress picture of Tabitha has been released by the National Center, and if Tabitha Tudors is still alive out there somewhere, she would now be 36 years old. I will have pictures of her age progress pictures throughout the last 23 years posted on social media. So make sure that you're following on Facebook and on Instagram so you can check those out. Before I wrap up this episode, I do believe that we should discuss some of the theories that are out there on this case. I want to remind everyone that these are just theories and are not fact. However, given the length of time that Tabitha has been missing, I think it's important to explore the various different theories, and again, in hopes that maybe someone knows something. The first theory, and not one I am going to talk about in length, for obvious reasons, is that Tabitha did in fact run away, which I just want to say, and I don't like to add my opinion very often, but I do not think that is what happened. Of course, people can surprise you and do unimaginable things, but I just don't think this is necessarily as cut and dry that she just up and ran away. Kind of going hand in hand with that theory is the theory that possibly Tabitha had met someone online. As I stated earlier, she would go to the library to utilize the computers to get on chat rooms and talk to people. Being 13 years old, children can be very impressionable and trusting and not realize the full dangers of online chatting. Now, with this known information that she chatted online in chat rooms, I can't help but wonder about the piece of paper with the initials on it. Who was that other person? Was this someone that she had met online? And honestly, there isn't much information about those initials and who it could have been, so it makes me wonder if she had met someone online and just no one knew it. And maybe she didn't realize that this person wasn't exactly who they claimed to be. Perhaps Tabitha had disclosed too much information about where she lived, the school she went to, and so on. I hope that those chat logs were thoroughly looked into, because this seems like one theory that I could see as being plausible. Again, Tabitha wouldn't have gotten into the car with a stranger, but if she was approached by someone who said they were so-and-so from the chat, or they knew so-and-so from the chat, maybe they could have talked her into getting into the car because she felt like she actually knew them. There's endless possibilities of who those initials could have been for, and I just wish I knew more information about that. The next theory is that someone who knew Tabitha's routine could have abducted her. She was like clockwork with her routine. Many of the neighbors had stated that if they saw Tabitha walking to school while they were headed to work, that meant that they were running late. She just was always set on her schedule. But with having this routine comes a great risk. As we all know, watching from true crime shows, stalkers typically watch people and learn their routines and behaviors. Maybe someone within the neighborhood or someone who frequented the neighborhood learned her patterns and routines and waited for her on that morning. There's also the possibility that many people speculate on is that boyfriend of her older sister. He knew and was around Tabitha long enough to know her routine and where she would be and when. And as awful as it sounds, it's not unheard of for older siblings, boyfriends, or girlfriends to begin feeling some kind of way for the younger sibling and becoming infatuated and fascinated by them. I am almost the perfect example of this, because I'm going to get real honest with you guys. I was sexually assaulted as a teenager by my sister's ex-husband. He used the fact that he knew me and knew that I trusted him, and he groomed me from the time that I was fairly young until he began sexually assaulting me. So as awful as that is, it does happen, and I believe things like that happen more often than we realize. So maybe this boyfriend had her trust, offered her a ride, or said something to her to make her want to get into the car, and something had happened. I also want to talk about a comment that I saw from someone while researching this case. Someone questioned the fact that Tabitha would get up in the night to go sleep in her parents' room. This person felt that maybe the reasoning was because that boyfriend lived within the home and made Tabitha feel uncomfortable, or something happened there to cause her to want to leave her bedroom and go into her parents' room to be near them. Again, this is just speculation, but I did find that somewhat interesting because Tabitha never really said why exactly she wanted to sleep in there, other than wanting to be close to her parents. There's also the possibility of all of those sexual predators living within a small radius of Tabitha's home. They also could have been learning her routine and decided to abduct her. There were many individuals that police tried to question who were known offenders, and they refused to cooperate. Perhaps one of them was involved. There is also the theory about the two individuals who had those federal subpoenas. Though the information was very limited and authorities said nothing was found, I do find it odd and interesting that someone would randomly blurt out that they had information about a case that happened many years before while they were being arrested. Granted, I know people claim things all the time, typically to get reduced sentences for stuff, but I do find that this little piece of information is slightly odd. Lastly is the theory that she was abducted and forced into sex work. There were several potential sightings, two of which sounded very familiar about two young girls with an older man. Those sightings couldn't be confirmed, but they also couldn't be denied. Of course, there is the possibility that this was completely random, and that Tabitha just crossed paths with the wrong person at the wrong time and they did something. I truly believe that whatever happened to Tabitha, it was something that was planned. I think given the fact that nobody heard or saw anything crazy that day, that whoever she got into the car with was someone that she felt that she could trust. I do believe that she got into a car. Obviously, it's just speculation, but I feel like that's the most plausible scenario. Her mom said that she would never get into the car with a stranger. So maybe she went quietly and willingly with whomever, and that is why nobody heard screams or a struggle. And both the boys who claimed to have seen her getting into the car with someone didn't mention a struggle, which again makes me feel like whomever took her was someone known to her. Tabitha Tudors has been missing for far too long, and her family deserves answers. They have been fighting for 23 years. Someone knows something. It truly just takes one person with the smallest shred of information to come forward to crack this case and give this family answers. If you or anyone you know has information on the disappearance of Tabitha Tudors, you can call the Nashville Metro Police Department at 615-862-8600. You can also call the FBI at 1-800-225-5324 or visit tips.fbi.gov. Just a reminder that there is a $50,000 reward available for anyone who has information. Crimesters, make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage everyone to share all things true crime. You can also follow me over on Instagram at CrimeAHolly, and if you would like more true crime content, you can find me at crimewithholly.podcast on TikTok. That is all for this week's Missing Monday case. Thank you all so much for being here. I will see you next time. But until then, always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.